All right, now it is time to bring in David Tarachuk with the Media Beat. David rejoins us after a couple of weeks' absence due to a lack of Skype in his worldwide travels. Good morning, David.
Well, good morning. It's good to be with you again.
It's nice to have you back here. You know, a lot's gone on in the past couple of weeks.
So I believe. I have been paying attention, but right now I'm not paying as much attention as I might have done otherwise. I'm now officially on vacation, I think you'd call it. I'm in the great state of Maine, the pine tree state.
Now,
and sure enough, there are lots of pine trees
now,
here, and that's what I'm enjoying mostly.
Where are you in Maine? Because I lived in Maine for 1 year.
Oh, I'm not so far from Bar Harbor. I'm northeast of it, and the nearest town, I guess, is Sullivan.
All right, I spent.
That probably means nothing to you.
Oh yes, it does. I spent a year in Augusta, living on the Kennebunk River. So.
Oh sure, okay, near enough.
It's near enough.
I know that from the map. I know it from little else, but I know it from the map. Yeah.
There's not that many reasons to go to Augusta, David.
But you found yourself there.
I found myself there through a series of circumstances. But anyway, and it was, I would have much rather been in Portland, to be honest with you, for 1 year. But Maine is Maine. It's a beautiful state. And have a good time up there.
Well, that's my plan. But now and again, I've been sort of checking in on the media capital of the world and the actual nation's capital as well. And boy, it's amazing. You know, it takes some time off, and you look into something again, and you find that very little has changed. Right? Is that your perception too?
My grandmother used to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's amazing.
Yes.
When you see the headlines that come out now a congressman being charged with insider trading, even the Democrats had their guy, Menendez.
A New York congressman, yeah, from my great state.
But he fought it and won, and he's probably going to win re-election. Washington just has that image that it's never going to shake, I think.
Which is a shame, really, because of, you know, all the dutiful people who do play by the rules. But of course, it was built on a swamp. It will inevitably gain a reputation for a swamp every couple of generations, and then efforts will be made to drain it. And the current efforts to drain it just seem to be revealing how swampy it really is, and there's not much draining going on.
And it's interesting in an election year for these things to crop up where no party really goes out and digs them out. They come up through the news media. I think it's the one good thing that has happened in the past 6 months to 9 months is it seems like the news media is acting more and more like the news media. I mean, not necessarily the cable networks, but they are out there breaking stories. Real stories.
Yeah, well, I think there's a very fine distinction. It's not fine in the sense of difficult to make, but it's a very good distinction to draw between the news media, the news, and cable news. Cable news doesn't do any investigation of its own.
No.
It doesn't really deserve the title news. And as we know, most of the time, I don't know what the proportion is, but I would guess it's more like 80% than less than 80%, is not news at all, it's opinion. And usually yelled opinion, squawked opinion, and certainly not investigative journalism, which
is what
lies behind so many of the revelations about specific cases of corruption. Yes.
And when it is investigative journalism, they have reporters on from the newspapers that are doing it. It's not the network.
Plus yeah, they're paid.
We now turn to our tame supply. The only people who are actually doing work, and they don't work for us, except when we pay them consultancy fees, of course.
Right, and it needs to be mentioned that they are paid to go on the air.
But that's good because that makes it possible.
Most of
because
the time,
otherwise there wouldn't be the money for them to do their investigative journalism.
That's not entirely true.
So I'm not against
that.
Yeah,
it's very much the case.
Yeah, except that, yes, I'm not against it. What I the bit that I'm against, not that anyone asked, is that the same person, in a lot of cases, it's the paid expert department. The same person will turn up on a number of different stations. Sorry, networks. What should they be called?
Outlets. Not talking about those. I like the ones that the networks pay and they just stay on that network. The Washington Post has two or three different reporters that are assigned to two or three different networks. I don't mind that at all. You're right. The other ones that hop from network to network to network, that I don't necessarily like. But I do like the ones that are assigned to the networks, and they're basically newspaper reporters. And it gives more publicity to the newspaper, which is a good thing.
Though that has been a quiet... And I, part of me suspects that was intentional, but it has been a quiet rekindling of the need. And what is most alarming at this juncture is that there's an entire, I'm not talking about us oldies as ever, but there's an entire generation that just, you know, only wants to be on the national cutting edge of things and has completely forgotten about the joy, if you will, of understanding how things work at a local level. Because the fact is that there's a lot of local functioning and a lot of local issues that prepare you for a national level that you're meant to cut your teeth on, or at least you were back in the day, and it just isn't happening. And yesterday, the funniest thing I saw in... the guy who writes this now is just not that great, but it was a Politico media report. It's like, the bad news, and it was quoting, I think it was Margaret Sullivan just did something, Margaret Sullivan for the Washington Post did something on the dearth of local journalism and local news and how necessary it was. That was important, but the good news was...
Yeah, and the threats to it, the economic threats more than anything else, yeah.
Yeah, and then the so-called good news in this newsletter was that seven different organizations were going to work on it. I thought, seven, that's good. You know, that's really going to solve, that's really going to solve the problem. Because what happens is the whole notion... that's always been one of the givens of a screen and of television. Your universe is just the dimensions of that screen. So the whole notion that seven different news organizations are going to make an effort with local was, you know, just really showed me that this was going to be taken care of for sure. You know, it's just not enough. And I totally understand the economics. But apropos, it's just, I don't know, the information that's been disseminated is weird, just flat weird. And I now just saw something that Michael Avenatti's running for president, and I just can't, I mean, that's a little, because people want to fight it.
That's not news, and that's not true.
It isn't?
No, he's not running for president.
So he's on his way to Iowa because? Anyway, it was just so bizarre. But it made me, it just...
Well, I think they need to hear from Michael Avenatti in Ohio. Sure.
Iowa.
But yes. Oh, sorry. Did you say? Oh,
I did.
Of course. We're approaching primary time again.
Oh my!
We're not even through the midterms yet.
No, but you know what's fantastic about that actually is, and I remember this from this is dinosaur time. All right. I remember, I guess it was, Marshall, what was the election?
Just because you have a long memory doesn't mean that you're a dinosaur.
Well, just let's pretend for a second. Tim Russert, Ohio. What election was that? Was that 4?
That was the second run of George Bush where he brought up, instead of the computers, he had a handmade chart.
But the reason is, whatever year that was, is after that was all done and settled, there was a wasteland on cable news at the time because there was nothing going on until they had to wait for the midterms for so that was pre-Barack Obama, right? So there was nothing to do or nothing to talk about between 2004 and 2006, and it was just desperate. I mean, you have to have a fireball.
Imagine that now.
I know, you couldn't have it. So that and then transpose it, what, 14 years later, give or take, and It's like, right, let's get ready for that because we're approaching the mid. You know, you've got to be planned out a bit ahead. But I just marvel at the this intensity has been maintained. It's just fascinating to me.
That's right. It would be strange to complain to be complaining about a famine of news reports. We are not short of them. Not short of them.
But I don't know. The quality of the information on some levels leaves a lot to be desired, mostly because that's opinion. But I do, there are people doing some very good work. And I think that there are also people noticing that there are people doing some very good work. And my favorite...
Oh, sure. In many ways, it's a golden age of journalism. The fact that we've been prompted to go back to our basics, not so much in local journalism, although that's happening too. But of course, the national turmoil of the moment is prompting an awful lot of very good digging going on. And, you know, I, for one, am certainly grateful for that.
Well, it sets a good example. So because of that, I want to, I want to skip to your other, your place of birth, because Brexit, I think, is a relatively, you know,
great state of Scotland.
The great state of Scotland, absolutely. Who didn't vote for Brexit, by the way? They voted to remain. And how complicated?
Well, there's lots of things they didn't vote for, right?
Yeah. Well,
they didn't vote for independence, although they might do if they were asked again, and they certainly did not vote for Brexit any more than other enlightened parts of the United Kingdom, like London itself, like Northern Ireland. Sure, but what is it that's striking you about Britain now?
It's not so much. It's more the concept of something. It was voted for 2 years ago, give or take. And is trying to be implemented, mm-hmm. Give or take. No one has a clue how to do it, give or take, or it doesn't appear that they do. And
well,
so,
there's a deadline, yes. Everything's supposed to be squared away by next March, and you can see how closely or how effectively we're moving steadily towards that calendar date. There's nothing sorted out at all, really, of any substantial nature. And it could be just one awful, awful mess once we get to March of 2019.
Plus, there are the burblings. I don't know if it will come to pass, but the burblings, of, you know, it's like, well, we could always vote on it again. So that just it, mm. is... I find that a good model, if you will, and that's why I just wanted to take it out of that's why I wanted to take advantage of your birthright rather than stick to U.S. politics for the moment. Just because it's an example of how a very close vote about which there's extensive disagreement and functional. Pick a word, any word that you're allowed to say on the radio, because it's
well. The situation, however you describe it, has certainly got resonances elsewhere. Certainly got resonances in the United States. Close elections that still seem to be litigated constantly after the result, right through the operation of a new administration and a very divided country. I think that's something both of our countries, and I'm a citizen of both, I'm glad to say, share at the moment. The uncertainty of Britain's way forward is the price to pay for that division and the divisiveness of the terms in which the policy discussions, if that's what they really are conducted. Britain is, I don't know if you would put it on a level pegging, but it's certainly suffering from a severe decline in the civility of our discourse. That's certainly true, just as in America. But whether or not Britain manages to sort itself out and make some decisive resolution to the very contentious progress they're making, certainly in negotiations with Europe, the other 27 countries that we are leaving behind are not going to let this separation take place happily or comfortably. They are determined to exact an exit price. When you leave a club, for instance, you have to lose the privileges of membership, and they're being very clear about that. Many in Britain are trying to cling on to some of the advantages of being associated with Europe, even if they're not formally in it. And then there are those too, the swashbucklers, if you like, or the crazy, depending on your point of view, who seem to think that, oh, it doesn't matter, we'll cut the cord as firmly and as vicious, you know, sharply as we possibly can. And there's, as yet, no clear pathway forward.
And the only point is the no clear pathway. The only point for our purposes is that there's no clear there's no clear way forward. And so what you hear about it, so whatever you hear is a product of something that might be going on at the moment. But unless you keep in front and center in your mind, no clear way forward, you don't really have an infrastructure to place the other bits of information.
Yeah, sure. It's a little, it is a somewhat far-fetched parallel, but something like what goes on in the animal world when there is great consternation. You see birds in particular pecking madly at the ground when they're under threat, which is a most pointless bit of activity. Biologists, I believe, call it displacement activity. And there's a lot of that going on, of course. Confronted with this, the party in power, Theresa May's Conservative Party, is of course now undergoing tremendous upheavals within itself, and a leadership struggle going on. Theresa May constantly being threatened by a revolt that would replace her, presumably with someone who takes a harder line on Brexit, but not necessarily in the end. British politics can be full of surprises, and as Harold Wilson, one of our more devious-minded prime ministers of the past, once said, a week is a very short time in politics. A week in politics is a very short time, which gave birth to all sorts of titles for books and a television program too in Britain, which is called A Week in Politics, because, you know, as here, an awful lot can change within a week, at least on the surface, all the rippling and the storm and drang on the surface, even though we don't make any particular progress as a whole, you know, at the base and as we move forward as a country as a whole.
And I learned that as a week is a long time. So I must have had it flipped in my mind, but it's just like, oh my God, what you can... that you where you start on Sunday or Monday, depending on where you're from, and where you end the following Saturday or Friday, depending on where you're from, is you can go round and round numerous times. There's just so much that
sure, and still be facing the same way. That's my point about my main vacation. I look back after a break and I see, well, nothing much has changed. There's been an awful lot of storm and drang though.
And how are you finding? Because you are in a place, and I think we've got a couple minutes left. And you are in a place where, it is just notably more it's calmer than it is in the media capital of the world, no matter what.
Anywhere is calmer than the media capital of the world, that's true. But no, I mean, that's the point. We call it a holiday, going on holiday in Britain, but I prefer the American phrase to vacate. You know, it's not actually to vacate, not exactly, but that's not the proper phraseology. But knowing that it's a vacation and knowing that the source of that word is vacate, And knowing that vacate means to empty, that's my preferred mode of taking a break. And certainly, if you come to places that are less full of all the hurly-burly, then you're doing a wise thing for yourself, for your mind, rather in the same way as I'm often saying on this program in previous weeks. It's a very good idea within the context of that hurly-burly week of politics to take, just for mental health, a one-day break in the course of a week. So, you know, over the bigger picture, it's a good idea to take a couple of weeks. I mean, that's the whole principle of a vacation, is it not? And certainly, you know, Maine has got a, you know, on the whole, a body politic which is pretty sane. It has a pretty extraordinary governor, however, someone who's trying in many ways to out Trump, and that makes for a sort of heady mix if you want to go that way and look at state politics. But as a whole, you know, the Maine is a pretty level-headed place, I'm glad to.
Yeah, and it's always good to restore oneself and one's equilibrium in a level-headed, level place. And so we are thrilled that you are back, and we look forward to... are you in Maine next week?
Yes, I think I will be still be in Maine.
All right.
I will still be in Maine next week. And then I'll be back in the media capital of the world to all the hurly-burly again. But let's talk next week.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.